Hello, welcome to the self-learning platform by Dr. Sushma Singh. Today we start Unit 10, Immanuel Kant. Let us have introduction about the unit. Immanuel Kant was German philosopher of the late 18th century, 1724 to 1804. He was a professor of philosophy at the University of Königsberg in Prussia. He was a contemporary of Rousseau, Hume, and Adam Smith. He was 65 years old at the time of the French Revolution of 1789, which he praised for its republican goals, while criticizing it for its use of immoral means. Kant believed that a political legal order could be just only if it pays homage to morality. He wrote, "A true system of politics cannot take a single step without first paying tribute to morality. For all politics must bend the knee before right, although politics may hope in return to arrive, however slowly, at a stage of lasting brilliance." Accordingly, in his moral and political philosophy, Kant's main concern was with the necessary universal and critical rational principles of morality and justice or rightness. In Germany, which is not to be confused with the notion of individualistic right, these are to serve as a normative standards for justifying and criticizing and reconstructing the political organization of societies at the national and international levels. Kant's major contribution was his critique of pure reason and epistemology, but his political philosophy is also substantially rich and novel. His political theory emphasized the necessity of treating every single person as an end in itself. His famous saying, "Treat humanity in your person and in the person of everyone else, always as an end as well as a means, never merely as a means." Unable to him to emphasize the rights of men, rule of law, a good legal procedure, and educational opportunities which would enhance human reason and enlightenment. Now the next topic is representative of the Enlightenment. We may begin by locating Kant in the long history of moral and political ideas by noting that while his critical philosophy was a culmination of the intellectual movement of the European Enlightenment, at the same time marked a clear departure from its separation of politics from morality. That is, while espousing the Enlightenment's enthronement of human reason over divine will or law of nature, Kant took the supreme principle of that very reason to be the moral law to be tested through what he termed as reason's categorical imperative of the freedom, autonomy, and equality of every human being as a moral person. By taking the moral law or the categorical imperative of the moral practical reason as the supreme principle of human reason, he distanced himself from his empiricist and rationalist preceders and contemporaries. Kant acknowledged that he was an Enlightenment thinker. He viewed his nature works to be contribution to the outgoing process of Enlightenment. In an article entitled "What is Enlightenment" in 1784, he defined it as the bold and courageous passage of humanity from a condition of intellectual immaturity and mental laziness to the age of reason. He wrote, "Enlightenment in man's living his self-caused immaturity. Such immaturity is not caused by the lack of intelligence, but by lack of determination of courage to use one's intelligence without being guided by another, say by a holy book, a priest, or a despotic ruler. Spare you'd have the courage to use your own intelligence is therefore the motto of the Enlightenment." Kant hoped to contribute to making the ordinary people become self-aware of the universal necessary, formal, and the priori conditions or structures of reason, which are implicitly present as normative ideas in their everyday thinking and acting as finite rational being living in this world. For this new self-awareness, Kant felt that the Copernican revolution in metaphysics is required. He viewed his own mature works to be exercises in such a philosophical revolution. Next topic is Kant's Copernican revolution in metaphysics. To his readers, Kant proposed his Copernican-like revolution in philosophy in the following words. "Hitherto it has been assumed that our knowledge must conform to objects, but all attempts to extend our knowledge of objects by establishing something in regard to them a priori by means of concepts have, on this assumption, ended in failure. We must therefore make trial whether we may not have more success in the task of metaphysics if we suppose that objects must conform to knowledge. The understanding does not derive its laws from, but prescribes them to nature. While the earlier Copernican revolution in astronomy, or rather cosmology, replaced the earth-centric view of the cosmos with the heliocentric or sun-centric view. Kant's Copernican-like revolution in philosophy placed the human being at the center of the world of knowledge and action. For Kant, the human being is another, neither a mere passive recipient of the impressions of the nature world, nor a mere passive subject in the moral world, but an active or creative agent in them. Kant did not agree with the rationalist and the imperialist thinkers of the Enlightenment in placing human nature or human reason, rather than the authority of the church, despotic rulers, custom on tradition at the center or source of human knowledge and morality. He, however, felt that the imperialist reduced human nature to the level of senses, instincts, feelings, and preferences, whereas the rationalist, for example, Descartes and Leibniz, narrowed or restricted human reason to an egoistic, monadic, or intuitive substance. Kant's transcendental idealist view of human reason and its universal formal principles of justice and morality would overcome these limitations. Next topic is transcendental idealist view of human reason. Kant's transcendental idealism is idealistic in that it is ideas constituted, ideal oriented rather than realistic, and critical reconstructive rather than traditionalist. These features of his thought are reflected in the titles of many of his books, for example, Ideas Towards a Universal History from a Cosmopolitan Point of View, by transcendental ideas or principles, he means the necessary universal formal a priori conditions or structures of the possibility of any knowledge or moral action by rational beings. As finite national agents, human persons, he says, have not only the faculties or capacities of sense and understanding, but also the faculty of theoretical and moral practical reason. He writes, "Man now finds in himself a faculty by means of which he differentiates himself from all other things, indeed even from himself, in so far as he is affected by objects, and that faculty is reason. This, as pure self-activity, is elevated even above the understanding with respect to ideas. Reason shows itself to be such a pure spontaneity that it far transcends anything which sensibility can provide it. The faculty of understanding has its a priori formal categories or concepts, for example, space, time, and causality, which it imposes on our perceptual experiences to make them understandable. Similarly, the faculty of practical reason or rational will has its synthetic a priori principles of laws of morality and justice, or right of our thought and action. He writes, in the theory of duties, men can and should be represented from the point of view of the property of his capacity for freedom, which is completely supersensible, and so simply from the point of view of his humanity considered as personality, independently of physical determination. As suggested in this passage, the transcendental ideas or norms of the freedom or autonomy and equality of the human person as a moral agent is central to Kant's theory of moral duties or obligations. These ideas, Kant notes, are contained in the moral law, which has traditionally been known as the golden rule. According to that rule, men, what we do to others should be what we would have them to do us. Kant also felt that the fundamental idea of the moral law is contained in Rousseau's concept of general will, as a will representing the true will of each member of the community. In fact, Rousseau's idea of self-governing capacities of human being had a great influence on the Kant's key idea of the autonomy of the human being as a moral agent. According to Kant, the basic idea of the moral law is this: what makes a maxim of action moral is its universability, a universability which implies the normative idea of the freedom or autonomy and equality of all human beings as moral essence. By autonomy of the moral agent, Kant means her or his freedom from both external coercion and from being determined internally by passions, appetites, desires, etc. The idea of the autonomy of the moral agent implies the idea of her or his a priori moral obligation towards the autonomy of other moral agents. This is a distinctive aspect of Kant's moral and political philosophy. Now we want to wind up this lecture. Thank you so much for your attention.